Services Studios. This is WKJG 1380 AM, 100.9 FM, The Fan, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This is your 1380 The Fan Local Sports Update. I'm Adam Lundy. In a game with four lead changes and three ties, the Tin Caps pulled out a 7-6 extra inning victory over the Dayton Dragons last night at Day Air Ballpark. Fort Wayne was tied with Dayton at 6 until first baseman Griffin Dorshing broke it open with an RBI double to take the lead in the 10th inning. The Dragons were inches away from tying the game back up in the home 10th when Logan Tanner attempted to score from second, but was thrown out at the plate by right fielder Kai Murphy to end the game. You can hear Game 4 of the series right here tonight on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Pre-game at 6:45, first pitch at 7:05. And the NBA play-in tournament continues tonight with the Chicago Bulls taking on the Miami Heat for a chance to take on the Boston Celtics as an 8 seed, and the Sacramento Kings play the New Orleans Pelicans for a chance to take on the 1 seed OKC Thunder as the 8 seed in the West. For 1380 The Fan, I'm Adam Lundy.
It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump.
Three ball, Max Landis.
Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Over the boys.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our friend's
zone. Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Y'all ready for this?
Thank God it's...
You can put the work away. It's time to head into a sports weekend. The work week is over. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump along with Adam Lundy, and we've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Any questions, comments, or suggestions, fire away. Big hour coming up, including Coach Griff. Shannon Griffith is going to join us to talk Indiana football. That's right. We actually are talking Indiana football in the spring because there's some optimism around this program, around this new coach, Kurt Cignetti. And last night, they had their spring game televised on the Big Ten Network. Had a chance to watch a little bit of the action last night, but it's so hard, Adam, to tell. Like, for instance, when the offensive line opens up a nice hole for the running back, was it a great play by the offensive line or was it a failure by the defensive front? You know, you just don't know because you have to figure out what you're looking for. And so I was trying to pay attention to formations and where they were utilizing certain players. Griff, I'm sure, will have a better grasp on what's happening with Indiana football. We'll talk to him about it coming up in just a few minutes. What a weekend. You got the Tin Caps finishing up a series in Dayton. Then you've got the NBA with their final play-in for the final spots of the playoffs tonight. Over the weekend, the NBA playoffs officially begin with Pacers starting action on Sunday evening. And we've got NHL playoffs.
Man.
What a first-round matchup. Tampa Bay Lightning, Florida Panthers.
Ooh.
Means nothing to people up here, but it's a big-time rivalry down in the state of Florida.
Absolutely.
You know what else? Actually, I think Jim Shevlin and I should have a little wager on this.
Ooh.
I don't think he's got the guts to back up Lightning. I think he's a Tampa Bay Lightning fan. And, of course, I've been to a few Panthers games. My wife and son went and saw the Panthers play the Las Vegas Golden Knights last year in Florida. They lost, but they got to go see him play. They got to experience a Stanley Cup Finals game. But, the Lightning and Panthers will be a first-round series. 46862, give us your thoughts. NBA, NHL, are you locked in or do you not care? Are you on to baseball?
On to baseball. Looking past.
I'm trying to segue here into a baseball topic.
All right.
The Tin Caps announcing that as part of the 15th anniversary celebration at Parkview Field, the Tin Caps are announcing their top 15 moments in the first 15 years of Parkview Field. And number one on the list.
Number one.
I got to go back to my voice.
All right.
I did this when I read the email, and I don't know why. The first moment on the list is opening day 2009. Tin Cabs opened up in front of a sellout crowd and won 7-0.
You having fun?
Over the Dayton Dragons.
Would like a 7-0 win over the Dragons tonight.
Yeah, we wouldn't mind that.
Wouldn't mind that one bit.
Ended up that the Tin Caps went on to have the best record in franchise history and claim the Midwest League Championship.
Good way to start the franchise.
Still the only Midwest League Championship that they've won since they've been in Parkview Field. But, yeah, that very first game, I was there.
I was not.
Where were you in 2009? Were you in Japan or that?
I was being 12.
Oh, you weren't in Japan.
I was off being a 12-year-old probably summer camp.
I cannot believe that it doesn't seem like that long ago you were 12.
Yeah, little 12-year-old Adam running around.
Wow.
Going to Camp Pottawatomie.
Man, I was at the ball game. I'm thinking, okay, this is the first one they released today. I don't know what schedule they're going to be releasing them, if it's going to be something coming out each week, if it'll be something more periodic than that. But What do you think will be on the list? Give me guarantees. See how many of these we can guess right.
I know one is going to be Tatis breaking the home run record.
The blast to left that broke the record.
I think that will be.
I thought about Tatis, and I think he's going to be on the list. But the question is it going to be the home run record breaking hit, or is it going to be the home run that went on the top of the summit out in center field?
Ooh, that's a good option.
460 feet or something to get it up to the roof of the summit out in center. So we'll just agree that one position is reserved, at least one position reserved for Tatis. Another one that I think has to be on the list would be the Geyser game. Probably one that Keith Winter would rather forget, but the Geyser, when they had, a broken valve or something on a...
Yeah, it was like a sprinkler head or something that got knocked off.
And then the water pressure just exploded the water out of the ground, straight in the air, about 20, 25 feet, and the field had a geyser that they couldn't get turned off. And so I think the Geyser game would be one of the top 15 moments. You know what else has to be a moment? A night we were involved with.
What is it?
Back when we had the Fort Wayne Five. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Tommy Schegler was a big part of that. But the Fort Wayne Five, who got involved somehow with the Dan Le Batard show, Le Batard embraced the topic. The Fort Wayne Five started to take things on their own and went to the Tin Caps. We got involved. We were a liaison in this where we were said, yeah, we'll be a part of it. We'll help to promote it. At the time, we had the Le Batard show on the radio. And then lo and behold, we had Mr. Ruiz, who came in and made an appearance in front of the Fort Wayne Five and about 700-800 fans that showed up that night.
Yeah, that was an awesome event. Getting him up from the Dan Le Batard show and just showing him what Fort Wayne was all about.
But then the game itself, the Tin Caps were down like 8 runs and came back and ended up winning the game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we had gone with Mike to dinner and had to listen to all of the excitement coming from a couple of blocks down the street.
Oh, no.
while we were enjoying our steaks. But, because we had to take off because he had to get up and catch like a 5:45 a.m. flight. Mm-hmm. And so he says, I don't know if I can make it to the end of the game. And they said, well, that's okay. Let's just hang out till the sixth or seventh inning and then we'll. And it was a one-sided game. The mood in the ballpark was kind of down. And we took off, went to dinner, and ended up at dinner for all of the fun that we found out about later. Although, I think that he found out about a lot more fun that was happening down in Florida. And I say that sarcastically. That was when Dan Le Batard, and again, the only day that he was away as the producer of the Le Batard show, he had taken this day to come up and hang out with us. And Dan Le Batard got a little loose on the air and talked about, a political subject that ended up getting him into a lot of hot water, and the relationship with ESPN went south from that moment forward.
Mm.
But we had a great time. And again, a big part of that night also was the late mayor, Tom Henry.
Absolutely.
Who played a role in all those festivities. That was a special night. What else do you remember as far as special moments at Parkview Field over the last 15 years?
Definitely a good text in answer there if you want to have a moment that you want to share. 46862.
Yep. We'd love to hear what your favorite moments in Parkview Field history would be. We're trying to guess the list. We're trying to take all of the excitement of announcing this totally out of it by just saying, we'll give you our 15 today, and then we'll let them figure out how right we are. But, hey, they started the topic. They sent the email. 15 top events in Parkview Field's 15 years. Mm. Let us know what sticks out for you. What do you think's a guarantee to make it on the list? 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. All right, so Duke is a perfect example of why I think college coaches are looking more favorably at retirement. These guys that have been around a while, and we've seen it over the last couple of years, Coach K, Jay Wright, Jim Boeheim, just go through the list of guys that have stepped away from the game, maybe some that have ended up on television, maybe by choice, maybe not, but the point is, the college coach has got an entirely different role now than he did have because of NIL. Because of college free agency. And I am all for the players making their fair share of money on items that they generate the income from or the revenue. The NIL was not intended to be pay to play here. It was intended to be when the university or another entity is selling items, jerseys, photos, posters, whatever it might be, where there's profit being made, that profit has to be shared with the college athlete. I was 100% for it. Now, it's gotten kind of crazy with the dollar amounts we're hearing, you know, things where guys are getting $700,000, $800,000. We just heard Jim Coyle before our show say that he is hearing Balo at IU got a deal that's very close to $1 million, maybe just on the shy side of $1 million to come and play at Indiana. But what it's requiring now is someone who is more a general manager than a coach. There's a reason in pro sports you have general managers and you have coaches, because they are two completely separate skill sets, two completely separate jobs, and some people can be one but not be great at the other. Chris Holtmann, I think, was an example that got over his head trying to be the general manager. But I think Chris Holtmann can really coach. I think he knows the game. I think he's a good teacher. I think he understands scouting and game planning and all. But when it came to actually managing the overall multi-million dollar program, it got out of hand for him. And what did he do? He goes to DePaul and he names LaValle Jordan as the general manager of the DePaul Blue Demons. I think that's the direction we're going to see with college basketball. I think we're going to see that as a staff position, somebody who then can manage how much money's available in the NIL fund, how much the players are going to get. The head coach doesn't have to be involved with that. He doesn't have to pick and choose favorites and give this to have another person who's responsible for how that money's divvied out and how much is being offered to some of the guys in the portal. Let a person that's got the time to kind of research it, work the relationships, let them be the one. But I think we're going to see that more and more, that more programs are going to rely on somebody that could currently be on staff as an assistant, because Laval Jordan is classified as an assistant coach, which also puts him under some restrictions and some limits of time he can spend with the players on the court and stuff. But he is the general manager for DePaul. I think we're going to see that. I don't think coaches want to have to deal with this. I think it's made the job that much tougher. All of a sudden, a spring season when all you had to worry about was, number one, catching up on sleep you lost during the season, and number two, getting to a weekend AAU event for a couple of weekends in the month. Now, it's a 24/7 job keeping up with everything happening in the portal, not only your guys to keep them out, but so every year you've got to re-recruit every player on your roster, plus you've got to be recruiting the guys who end up in the portal from other rosters. It's just an insanely different job than it was 4 or 5 years ago. It's becoming even tougher as you move forward, and the courts continue to rule against the NCAA, meaning that the players have more empowerment, and it makes it even tougher for the coach to manage that. So it's not an easy job right now. And I think that's why a lot of coaches are kind of weighing the options of retirement and thinking, you know, this is the time. It's getting to a point where it's starting to spin out of control for what I can do. And it's just better for me to step aside, let someone else who can handle all the financial parts of it, all the management parts of it, and I'll just go to the sideline and I'll be a fan.
Yeah, and I think we'll see a lot more of this as coaches don't want to deal with all of this stuff. Bring in more general managers to kind of handle that side of the basketball program.
Yeah, and whether you call them the program administrator or executive director of the program, whatever the title might be, but I think you're going to see it, because it basically is almost a branch of professional sports now, and every professional sports organization has a general manager that's not necessarily the coach. Now, in a couple of rare situations, yes, they wear both hats, but in most cases, the general manager is different than the guy who actually coaches the X's and O's. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. But, you know, you look at the overwhelming responsibility that John Shire has at Duke or John Calipari has in Arkansas, where Arkansas didn't have a scholarship player on the entire roster. Kentucky's just about down to that. Duke, you know how many they've got? A program like Duke, you know how many scholarship players they've got as of today on their roster? Two.
Ooh.
Two.
That's rough.
They lost almost everybody to the NBA, the transfer portal, or just graduation eligibility.
Crazy.
I mean, two players on their roster. They want to go out and play some open gym. All they got to do is find two people to match up against and get a pickup game started. They can play two-on-two half court. That's it. Arkansas, it's a one-on-one game. You got one guy now on scholarship. That's how hard it is to put a roster together. Yeah, Indiana's actually in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Compared to what some of these big programs are. 46862, give us your thoughts. And what do you have as some of the most memorable events of the 15 years of Parkview Field? Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Feels good to be into the weekend. The work week is over. Last night, it was spring football for the Indiana Hoosiers, and kind of the first official look at Kurt Cignetti's Indiana Hoosiers football squad, which I don't know what we get out of spring games or what coaches are looking to get out of spring games and if IU got what they were looking for and if the fans are satisfied. But we're going to find out. The guy who follows Hoosiers football closer than most of us do anyway, he's joining us right now on our guest line. It is the coach, Shannon Griffith. Griff, how are you, man?
Doing well, Rafi, doing well.
All right, so what are expectations out of a spring game? What do coaches need to see, and how much do they actually show?
Well, I think they're looking for basically a crisp and clean type of scrimmage where everyone looks like their coach and knows what they're doing and where they're going. I think last night that was accomplished. I'm kind of with you on the screen, you know, the scrimmages and stuff. It's kind of hard to get a true pulse in some respect. But last night I came away feeling that in some areas the Hoosiers have improved with their personnel. And in other areas, you know, there's still a couple of big components to what they need on defense.
Well, let's start because what about the battle at the line of scrimmage? That, to me, is the hardest place to really measure where the Hoosiers are at because the offensive line's going against the defensive line. So every time the offensive line creates a hole, it's also the defensive line that's giving up a running play. But what did you think about the Hoosiers up front? Do you notice any difference? Are they more physical? Are they quicker? Did you notice anything different in the blocking schemes? What did you see at the line of scrimmage?
I did. I was impressed with what they had up front last night. I thought they looked much better than they have in years past. I think they've got some decent size that they maybe have lacked over the last few years. I think you can tell that Coach Bopstead now having a couple years under his belt with the players there at Indiana, it's starting to show and reflect on the field. So last night, you know, not that there was any, you know, new plays or anything like that. Every offense in America runs about the same thing. But I thought with what they did up front and what they have in the backfield was a significant improvement from what we've seen in years past.
Griff, I'll tell you what, I went into this game. And I heard you discussing this, I think, with Jim Coyle just before we came on yesterday about what we would see. And Jim Coyle said, it's always vanilla. Nobody shows anything. Kurt Cignetti is one of the only coaches that I have started to believe would say, I don't care what they see, even if they know what we're running. We're going to run it better than they can stop it. And they can just, you know, I mean, I just feel like that's the kind of coach Cignetti is. But what did we see from the Hoosiers in general offensively that might be different than what we've seen in past years under Tom Allen?
Well, first of all, I was surprised on how much they did show, and quite honestly, and kind of the same mindset that what you have, that Coach Cignetti says, we are what we are, and here's what we do. Offensively, I thought, you know, they utilized the tight end quite a bit in terms of their formations. They, you know, attached him, they unattached him, they spread him out in space. Other than that, you know, you've got your typical inside-outside zone concepts, and then, of course, dropping back and throwing the football. So I know Coach Cignetti last night said that, you know, they wanted to throw the ball about 55 to 60% of the time last night. And I think that's just to try to alleviate any potential injuries that may come from somebody getting rolled up on the running game.
Griff, you know the college game more than maybe I do. I have to kind of concede that, even though it makes it it's very difficult for me to admit it. But when you talk about the tight end, is that a position you've got to recruit to your style? When you talk about lining them up tight and then maybe splitting them out, is that two different players, or is that one guy that has to have a very versatile skill set?
I think it's a guy that has to have a very versatile skill set. And, you know, I do think they've got a young man that came from James Madison, although because I've been on the road for the last 6 hours, I'm kind of escaping my name from James Madison last year, that is a very athletic tight end, and he's done a lot of that. But, you know, with the tight ends they had last night, they were able to do what I thought they would, you know, wanted to do with the tight ends. And then there were times where they went 4 and 5 receivers as well. And the wide receiver group is very deep. There's a lot of good wide receivers running around for Indiana as well. So there's two positions on the team that I think you can feel overly excited about, running backs and wide receivers, because I do think they've got speed at both positions. I do think they've got players that can not only catch the ball in a short area of the field and make people miss, but also guys that can take the top off the defense. So those two things were pretty evident last night, as well as their defense. I thought their defense was aggressive. They did a lot of different types of zone pressures and things of that magnitude, as well as bring full-scale blitzes at times. So I was very surprised from the standpoint of how much they did in a spring scrimmage, but I don't think they're trying to, you know, trick somebody out there, and they're not looking to sneak up on anybody either.
No, but I was also impressed because one of the philosophies or schemes that you can get to as a college coach is figure out who your playmakers are and figure out a way to get the ball to them in space. We've seen that with Purdue's offense over the years when they had Rondell Moore. We've been accustomed to it, that when you get a playmaker, you want to get him in space. I thought that was something where Indiana, with those wide receivers and the new speed, they had an elusiveness, they had a quickness, and they had burst of speed that we didn't see before last year, especially.
No, and, you know, you've got the kid, you know, the Miles Price kid that came from Texas Tech, and you've got Miles Cross, the kid that came from Ohio U with the quarterback Rourke. Those two guys are very impressive players. And then the young man on the outside, Kobe, had a nice game, a scrimmage last night. He's the kid that came in from Tennessee over a year ago. So I do think they've got good depth at that spot. And, you know, don't forget Donovan McCauley, who Coach Cignetti kind of challenged him in the middle of spring practice that he wanted more from him and he needed to pick it up. And last night, he did some nice things, had a nice catch in the back of the end zone, and it was a very overall solid evening, and like I said, I think they got out of it what they wanted to.
One thing fans will always do is they will take a spring game, and they will make their decision on who should play and who shouldn't, but of course, coaches see plenty of more that we don't get a look at as a fan. Quarterback position. Is this going to be Rourke and no question about it being Rourke, or is this still a battle?
I think it will be projected outwardly as a battle, but I do think that Rourke, based upon some of the things that, you know, and people that I've talked to, had a better spring. However, Taven Jackson looked awful good last night, and Taven's problem is not his ability, it's more of his mental capacity at times. He gets, you know, out of whack. And if they can keep that in check, I think Taven Jackson can be a great player. But I think right now, I think Rourke would be the guy. But you know as well as I do, you need more than one quarterback.
What else stood out for you? What anything else that you noticed last night? Of course, I would talk about the kicker, but who spends time talking about kicking? But what else stood out for you last night?
Well, I like their linebacking core. That they have there in place right now. And I think that by far is the strength of their defense, led by Aiden Fisher, who came from James Madison, very talented young man. And I did like their linebacking core. And I would say, based upon what I think, I do think they're missing some D-line depth. And I think in the secondary, there's still some question marks back there. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're not looking in the portal potentially for those two positions.
Was Kurt Cignetti, was this a dress rehearsal for the coaching staff as well, just to make sure they're all on the same page? Because, it seemed like he was almost coaching it as a regular game.
Yeah, I think they really tried to get a feel for Memorial Stadium and just all the things that is even new for them. How they do things, running in and out of personnel groupings, getting the communication from the sideline. I could not tell last night if they were using the communication between the offensive coordinator and the quarterback directly, but you know, that's one of the new rules in college football this year. And I would assume that was on display last night, but I couldn't tell. But, yeah, they try to use it as much as a dress rehearsal as possible. And also to give a chance for the kids just to play the game, because they're still evaluating what they've got, and there's probably still some position battles that last night was probably a game that they will evaluate and look out for some of those close battles.
Let's talk about how the fans dial this up. They go into the game, and, of course, going into next season, I think most Hoosiers fans are cautiously optimistic. But after last night, should they dial up the optimism or maybe tone it back a bit?
Well, you can dial it up. You got 8 home games. So when you have 8 home games, that's got to be a factor in your overall thought process as it pertains to what the season may hold for you. I do think there's optimism based upon what I've seen. Now, whether they can address the issues that they have defensively in a short period of time, that will be a to be determined. But I think overall, when you have a new staff and everything's new, I think that optimism comes, you know, naturally. Ultimately, we'll have to wait till they line up and play a true game to get a true feel of what all they have in this first year for Coach Cignetti.
All right, Griff, I know you're keeping up on what's happening with the Hoosiers. You've got a podcast. What's all the data? Where do we find it? What do we need to learn? What do we need to learn from the mind of Griff?
Well, you can find me Hoosier Football Tailgate on YouTube and X and Facebook. And most of the time when we do videos that stream live through those platforms. And then I've been talking with Jim Coyle every Thursday morning throughout the year and doing some things with him. So that's where you can find me. But my Friday nights are reserved. I've already put that down in the book. I'm ready for high school football because I'm telling you, there's a talented group of players within the Northeast Indiana corridor this year again.
What did you think of Brock Schott going to Miami, going down to the U? Were you surprised?
I was surprised just because I didn't think he would get out of being a Big Ten type of player. But, you know, listening to what some people said, that Miami kind of wowed him and impressed him, and that's where he felt he needed to go. And we'll have to watch him via TV, I guess.
Yeah, the scenery at the beach is tough to turn down when you're an 18-year-old young man. But
yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah, Griff, always enjoy it. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again.
All right, partner. We'll see you.
Yep, that is Shannon Griffith, Coach Griffith, joining us here on the Sports Rush Talks of Hoosiers football. We'll take a quick time out. Coming back, reunited. Who and where? We'll tell you about that. Plus, got a question for texters, so stick with us because we want your input in our next segment. We'll also make our picks for the NBA playoff series. That happens next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Big night tonight, Tin Caps in Game 4 of their series against Dayton. They'll try to get the series evened up. They're basically in a position like they were last week. Tin Caps and the Dayton Dragons coming up tonight, 6:45, 7 o'clock first pitch. John Nolan on the call from Day Air Ballpark in Dayton. All right, so it has happened. They are back.
Reunited, and it feels so good.
Yes, the Cavender Twins.
Reunited,
social media darlings. Really, probably at the forefront of being an influencer on social media. And, of course, their paths in college basketball took them to Miami. They had the upset win at Assembly Hall over the Indiana Hoosiers. And then they left the game. Well, it's interesting because one of the sisters decided that she wanted to come back and play. And so it was Hannah Cavender who announced that she was going to come back to college basketball, use her, I think it's her final year of eligibility, and play for TCU. Well, yesterday, Haley Cavender, her twin sister, announced her return to college basketball, that she was going back to where she came, Miami of Florida. Well, it took all of one day for Hannah to say no to TCU after she already had announced that she was going to transfer to TCU. She backed out, and now she is heading with her sister, Haley Cavender, and they'll be back in college basketball this year at the U. Now, maybe that influenced Brock's shot.
Maybe.
Cavender twins are going to be on campus down in Miami. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Question for the text line. You know, we met somebody last week who was on a tour of minor league ballparks. And now minor league ballparks, you're talking, he was working, I think, on getting to 190 minor league ballparks. And there's 120, 160 that are currently affiliated minor league franchises. But what I thought about is the bucket list for some is to get to every major league ballpark in their lifetime. Okay, so I thought about this. I thought, what if we were to offer a chance to go and see a baseball game in every major league ballpark, every single ballpark, one after another, all within the matter of a single summer? Now, the trade-off, you get to go to see a game at every ballpark, but you're going to have to give up about 3 months of your pay. In other words, you've got to leave your job for 3 months unpaid. Would you give up 3 months of your pay to get a trip to go to every Major League Baseball ballpark in the country? Is that something that would be on your bucket list? 46862. Or is there just certain spots you'd like to go see? Maybe there's some ballparks you really don't care about and wouldn't want to give up pay to go to a ball game at, let's say, and just throwing a city out there, at the Angels, to go to Los Angeles and see the Angels. But you'd like to go see the Dodgers, but you wouldn't want to give up the pay to see the Angels. This is giving up 3 months of your pay to go to every ballpark and visit it once. 46862. All right, so we've got the NBA playoffs starting this weekend, Adam. And, I got to make up a little. Well, I actually don't against you because you didn't beat me in the college bracket contest. But now we're going to do our NBA bracket. Going to make our picks for the NBA playoffs, and we will start. And I got to go within the order in which they play this weekend.
Okay.
So let's start with the Cleveland Cavaliers at the Orlando Magic. Now, I'll tell you, in my mind, I think the Cavaliers have more talent. I think the Magic, just a little bit young, maybe not having the playoff experience. I think Cleveland, with Donovan Mitchell, they're just too much offensively for the Magic. I think Cleveland is going to win this series. I'm going to give it to the Cavaliers in six, and I've got the Cavaliers advancing to the next round.
I'll take Cavs in seven.
Okay. You think they'll win game seven at Orlando?
Yes.
That's the only reason I took six,
mm-hmm.
was because game seven would be in Orlando, and I think they're more likely to win it at home than on the road. All right. You've got the Thunder, who will be taking on... who do they play?
They will play the winner of the Kings and the Pelicans tonight.
They play tonight and then they play tomorrow? I'm on the wrong week. I'm on the wrong week.
You're good.
It's going to be easier if I go back and choose this weekend. We've got the Suns and Timberwolves. Let's start with that one. Suns and Timberwolves. You heard me talk to Chris Denari about this one, Adam. I think the Suns have the experience. They've got... I think they've got more offensive punch than the Timberwolves. My only concern is whether or not the Timberwolves can dominate around the basket and keep this game close. Minnesota's a 1.5-point favorite in game one coming up tomorrow afternoon, but I've got Phoenix winning the series in seven.
All right, I'll take the Timberwolves in six.
76ers and Knicks. I know which direction you're going, but I'm not going to agree with you because I think the 76ers, I think they're going to have multiple weapons that step up.
Who are those weapons?
Maxie's playing well.
Maxie.
Yeah, Maxie.
And he's going to take out the Knicks by himself.
Nope, I think he's got Embiid.
Embiid is questionable for game one.
He's going to be fine. He's going to get over whatever is ailing him.
He's injured, man. He's playing at 50%.
He plays at 50%, 90% of the game. So if you want to use statistics against me, who do the Knicks have? They're not exactly 100% healthy.
But at the big man position, we've got Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson to throw at the big man, Embiid.
All right. I'm still going to take the 76ers in six.
Knicks in six.
Six?
Knicks in six.
Wow. All right, let's go Lakers Nuggets. It's just too much Nuggets. I think the Lakers do win a game or two. I think they get Anthony Davis, LeBron James. I think those two will be able to combine to maybe get them through a couple of wins, but I just think the wear and tear of playing up in the high altitude is going to add up against the Lakers. I'm going to take the Nuggets in six.
I'll do the same, Nuggets in six.
All right, we look at the Celtics taking on the winner of tonight's game between the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls. I don't think it matters who wins. The Heat are completely beat up, and the Bulls just aren't good enough. So I'm going to take the Celtics in four.
Yeah, I'll do Celtics in five.
Bring out the broom.
Give them one game.
Okay, I'm bringing out the broom.
All right.
Mavericks at the Clippers.
Mm.
I'll be honest. I think Dallas is playing pretty well right now, and I think that Dallas wins this series. I'll give it to the Mavericks. And I don't know what we're going to get from the Clippers.
I feel like we never know.
No, we really don't.
No.
I mean, you don't know who's going to play, who's going to be healthy. I'll take the Mavericks.
Yep. I'm also taking Dallas.
Pacers over the Bucks in six.
Ooh, all right. I'll go seven. Pacers.
Pacers in seven, winning it on the road. I like it.
All right.
And then the OKC Thunder, they await the winner of tonight's play-in between the Kings and the Pelicans. I'll tell you this, if it's the Kings, look out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look out. If it's the Kings, I think this series goes seven. I think if it's the Pelicans, I think OKC beats them in six, maybe seven. But I think it could end in six. And if they don't have Zion Williamson, I think it could end as quick as five. But I think if the Kings win this game tonight, and I think they will, I'm going to say it goes seven. It's in OKC. I'll give it to OKC only because they're at home. I think it's a 1.7 game, seventh game win. I'll give it to OKC.
Kings win tonight, win the series in six.
Woo! All right, we'll take a break, and you can always weigh in on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862, 46862. Taking you into your weekend and wrapping up the sports rush next here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Who was the general manager for the Colts back in the mid-90s, has passed away at the age of 83. He's the father of the Bengals director of player personnel, Duke Tobin. And, of course, as a general manager, responsible for the selection of eight Pro Football Hall of Famers during 27 years as an executive with the Bears, the Colts, and the Lions, including work in putting together that 85 Bears team, who he not only found good football players, he found singers and dancers for the video as well. also, the Caitlin Clark effect continues around the WNBA as the Washington Mystics have announced they're moving their June 7th game against the Indiana Fever to the Wizards Arena due to, quote, unprecedented demand for tickets. They normally play in a 4,200-seat arena, and they've moved to Capital One Arena, which has almost five times the capacity.
And there will be more fans than an average Wizards game, so there you go.
Once again this weekend, we've got the Dragons and the Tin Caps coming up tonight. 6:45, the pregame, 7 o'clock, the first pitch. Game times at 1 o'clock, both Saturday and Sunday. And then Sunday night, Pacers basketball against the Milwaukee Bucks, round one of the NBA playoffs. Big thanks to our guests that appeared on the show, Lauren Ross, new Purdue Fort Wayne Mastodon, Chris Denary, Shannon Griffith. Have a great weekend. Back on Monday with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.